Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 2, the Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, and Canto 5, the Godheads of the Little Life. And I think we stopped at the break on page 160. Would you like to start today, Doris?
This huge unintelligent turns in the shadows of the news incontinence. It hides a key to inner meaningness. It looks in our hearts for voice we cannot hear. An enigmatic labor of the spirit, an exact machine of which none knows the use. An art and ingenuity with our sense, this minute elaborates orchestrated life. The orchestrated life forever plays a more tedious symphony. The mind learns and knows not, turning its back to truth. It studies surface knows by surface, thought, life steps, survey, and nature processes, not seeing for what we act or why we live. It marks our tireless care of just noise, the patient's intricacy of fine detail, the ingenious spirit's brave inventive claim in the brave future mass of endless words. As purposeful figures to her purposeless son, it gathers story piles and climbing roofs on the close park foundation she has made. Syllables appear in mystic air, or mounts a stair of green to a mystic moon. Transient creations point and hit the sky. The word conjectures stream is labored out on the dim floor of mind in certitude, or painfully built fragmentary home.
Thank you. I think this passage is about our attempts to understand the world we live in. This huge world, it's always turning. And Shobindo says it's unintelligible to us. We can't grasp it. It's turning in the shadow of a mused inconscience. This state of consciousness of the material universe. It's like someone in a state of deep, indrawn trance. And the world that we see, there is a key to understanding it, but it hides that key from us. So we miss its inner meanings. And the fact that we have a physical body and we live in a material world, that locks into our hearts a voice we cannot hear. There's a voice within that would guide and help us, but it's locked in by this dense matter. And then there's the whole business of life in the material universe. It's enigmatic, it's a riddle. All this activity that goes on originated, it seems, by the spirit. It's so precise and accurate, but we don't know what it's for. There seems to be an art, even ingenuity, extreme cleverness in detail. But what is the meaning of it? This minute, elaborate, orchestrated life. It seems to be harmonized, no? It's forever playing its symphonies, which seem to have no purpose, motive, meaning. We develop mind. The mind has the capacity to learn, even to understand to a certain extent. But it doesn't know. It can't know or doesn't manage to know the reality of things. We're always focusing on details, turning our backs on truth. The human mind studies the laws of the surface of matter and uses its surface thought to do that. So we study all the steps of life. So much study has been done about nature's process. But however much detail we go into, we don't see why. What is she doing? Why are we here? Why are we living here in this world? Our mind can notice how careful nature is. No? There seems to be some very inventive plan worked out by the ingenious, clever spirit that's behind what seems to us the great futile mass of endless works of nature. So we try to interpret that, to add some kind of purpose to what seems to be all her purposeless sum. So then the mind piles up all kinds of constructions, huge buildings, climbing roofs, based on those very, very carefully laid foundations that nature has prepared for us. And our mind rears up all kinds of wonderful structures, imagined citadels reared in mythic air. Or the mind may even try to reach up on a stair of dreams to a mystic moon, to a state that's illuminated by reflected light. So the transient creations of the mind point up, hit the sky in our attempts to understand. We work out, we labor out a whole scheme about what this world is for and about, but it's based on the dim flaw of mind's incertitude. Or some philosophies may painfully manage to build up some kind of a whole, but it's only a fragmentary whole, bits of clarity here and there. Do you like to read?
Impenetrable, a mystery recondite, is a vast plain of which we are not. Its families are disposed to our belief, because we know not the great thing of the soul. Inscrutable words and possible adjectives, only the fringe of a rich surgery. Our instruments have not that brutal light, our will choose not the eternal loop, our heart's sight is too blind and passionate. Impotent to share in nature's mystic fact, inapt to feel the pulse and core of things, our reason cannot sound life's mighty sea, and only counts its waves and scans foam. It knows not whence these notions touch and pass. It sees no wither sweeps the hurrying flood. Only it strives to canalize its powers and hopes to turn its course to you. But all it sees far from the conscious joy.
Thank you.
I stumble in your world. Our heart's sight is too blind and passionate. In this case, this passionate means a limited passion.
Means when it's, he says passionate, I think it means in a way we have two intense feelings about what we perceive, and that distorts our view.
Because there's also a positive passion.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I don't think this is really negative. It's natural to the heart to be passionate, but in this task of understanding, we have to be more dispassionate, more impersonal.
You say also love is blind. Love is hard. The creature self is blind and not objective and witness.
So to our minds, or to our present state of consciousness, this vast plan, we are part of a vast plan, but we can't understand it yet. it's intangible. Recondite means hidden, secret. It's full of harmonies, but to us, those harmonies often seem like discords, things that shouldn't happen, clash and conflict, because we are not aware of the purpose that they are serving. It's like in music, sometimes the composer will make us hear something that's very discordant to the ear, but then if we listen further, we notice that it was leading somewhere, was preparing something else. The cosmic agencies, all the powers that are at work in the universe, are inscrutable to us. We simply can't read them or understand them. And we only see, he says, a fringe of a wide surge. Here I've got a fringe on my shawl, no? A little trimming on the edge. There's so much more, this wide surge, this whole ocean of the universe. We don't have the instruments to be conscious. Our instruments, our minds, our senses, they don't have that greater light that would be needed to understand. So because we're so bewildered about it all, because we don't see how it's all working, our will is not in tune with the eternal will. Our hearts sight the way that we experience with our emotions, our strong feeling. It's too blind, too intense. Our reason is in a way one of the best tools we have, but it's unfit, inapt to feel the pulse and core of things, into the heart of things. Our reason cannot sound life's mighty sea. Here, sounding, it means measuring how deep the sea is. It can't measure the depths. So it concentrates on the surface, counts the waves, scans the foam of that ocean. It doesn't know where these movements are coming from that just touch us and pass on. And it doesn't see where that flow of things is going. Whither means where to. So our reason tries to canalize the powers of the universe, to get hold of them and direct them into ways that serve our purposes. We hope to turn its course to human ends. We want to use all these forces that are at work. But all the means that our reason can use, all the tools it can use, belong to the inconscient store that come from the base of matter. Lorraine?
Unseen here acting huge growth energies, and only triples of the currents are our fair. Our mind lives far off from the authentic light, catching at little fragments of the truth. In a small corner of the infinity, our lives are inlets of an ocean's force. Our conscious movements have sealed origins. The windows shadowing seats, no converse holds forward. No understanding binds our comrade across. Our acts emerge from the cryptic, our minds ignore. Our deepest depths are ignorant of themselves. Even our bodies a mystery shop. As our earth's roots move, screaming below our earth. So lie unseen our roots of mind and life. Our springs are kept closed, hid beneath their bins. Our souls are moved by powers behind the wall.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about this passage? We don't even know the origins of our conscious movements, things that we do and we think that we know why we do them. But in fact, the origins of them are hidden from us, sealed up. The consciousness which moves doesn't have any connection with those shadowy seats where we are moved from. And we have many, many different parts. They should be comrades, but there's no understanding connecting them. Our actions come up from a secret, deep place, a crypt, that our minds don't know anything about. Here the word ignore means are ignorant of. Our deepest depths are ignorant of themselves. And even our body, we think we know something about our body, but it's a mystery shop full of mysteries. The roots of our earth lie screened below this earth that we see. And in a similar way, the roots of our mind, our thoughts, our life are hidden, unseen to us. Our springs, the springs that move our machinery, are kept closely hidden beneath, within. Even our souls are moved by powers behind the wall. We can't see them. It's not even a veil, it's a wall. You'd like to read?
In the subterranean reaches of Guru, a priestess acts and recks not what it means, using blinking monitors and slides. It is the cause of what we think and feel. The trouble of dies of the subconscious mind. It finds law, memory, interpreters, only of their small tasks routine aware and busy with the record in ourselves. Conceived in the subliminal secret, made an obscure occult machinery, capture the mystic morals whose measured belief transmits the messages of the cosmic force, a whisper falls into light's inner ear and echoes from the doomed subconscious cave. Speech leaps, thought quivers, the heart vibrates, the will answers and teach, and nerve obeys the call. Our lives translate these subtle intimacies. All is the commerce of a secret power.
Thank you. In the subterranean reaches of the spirit, the underground levels, there's a power which acts, but it doesn't know what it means. It doesn't know what its intentions and significance are. It is an unconscious power. Then there's something in our subconscious mind, the troglodytes, he says, the cave dwellers, the people who, the beings who live in the deep caves of our subconscious mind. They have people working for them, monitors and scribes, people who note things down, what that power has set in motion, that power which is the cause of what we think and feel. But these troglodytes and these unthinking monitors and scribes, and he says they're ill-trained, they haven't been properly taught how to interpret what that power intends. No? They are only aware of their small tasks routine. And they are busy, what they are doing is keeping all the data, collecting it all in ourselves. They are hidden in the subliminal secrecies below the threshold of awareness, in the midst of an obscure, hidden machinery but they catch the sound of the mystic Morse. You know what is Morse? The Morse code. Hmm? Yeah. And the Morse code, of course, there are many ways of expressing the Morse code, but the old way, which perhaps Schrobinder was thinking about here, was on a telegraph, you know, the a lever that made short and long sounds, da 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 da, and that could be interpreted by a skillful interpreter to give a meaningful message, no? So that's what those troglodytes are doing. They are transmitting the messages of the cosmic force. But maybe they're not doing it very well. They're ill-trained, they don't understand. They're just doing their routine. So, but because of their interpretation, a whisper falls into life's inner ear. We don't hear that whisper. It echoes in those dumb, subconscious caves. Dumb means colorless. And then, whoops, we say something, or we think something, or the heart vibrates, and there's a response in the will. And then the body, tissue and nerve, they obey the call. So in this way, our lives, our human lives, are translating these subtle things that are going on secretly out of sight. Everything we do or think or feel, all is the commerce of a secret power that we really don't know much about. Yes?
I don't understand. The person acts and reacts not what it means.
He just says that there's a puissance. He doesn't say which. That in the subterranean reaches, in these underground levels, there's a power. And this, he doesn't define here what that power is. Later on, perhaps we can connect it with the cosmic force, with the universal force. He says that's the messages that are getting transmitted. Yes, it wrecks not. It means it doesn't care. But also, it's unaware of the significance of what it is doing. This is all happening subconsciously.
I am thinking that reading Savitri would use this same mechanism to affect our mind, life, and body. That the little troglodytes would be busy with something more interesting. It would record it at the subconscious level. Because it says
yes,
it keeps the record in the
cells.
Yes,
I think when Mother says that Savitri is a mantra, she hints at something like that, that Savitri is a mantra for the transformation of the world. That if we hear these words over and over again, it does something at this subconscious level. And we've heard of many people, examples of people who were in terrible pain, for example, and who listened to Nirodha's recording of Savitri, fell asleep, and woke up and were perfectly okay. Things had just been put in order. And surely it must have a purificatory effect. And we read this poem and we read it over and over again, and there are lines that stick in the mind perhaps or come back unexpectedly in certain situations. So that is part of that positive working of the subliminal that we are speaking
of. It says
here,
a whisper falls into life's inner ear. Mm. And then it echoes in the subconscious, then speech leaps, thought quivers.
Yeah. We respond without knowing what we're responding to, without understanding our response. It happens. Tissue and nerve obey the call. We just do what we're prompted to do. And this is all the working, the business of a secret power And here he doesn't really define what that power is.
And excuse me,
the commercial,
how do you mean?
I think it means like exchanges. So that's about the life, what we just read. Now he's going to speak about the mind, or the mind of life. Alice, would you read?
A thinking puppet is the mind of life. Its choice is the work of elemental strengths that know not their own birth and end and cause, and glimpse not the immense intent they serve. In this nether life of man, drab, hued, and dull, yet filled with poignant, small, noble things, conscious dog is pushed 100 ways. He feels the push, but not the hands that drive, for none can see the mast untrue, to whom our figure cells are marionettes, our deeds unwitting movements in their grasp, our passionate strife in entertainment's scene. Ignorant themselves of their own fount of strength, they play their part in the enormous whole. Agents of darkness imitating light, spirits obscure, moving things obscure, unwillingly they serve a mighty power.
Thank you. So we should remember that this is happening in the realms of the little life. We're all of us carrying that little, undeveloped, unconsecrated life in us. And on page 153, he gives us the characteristics of the little life. Top of page 153, line 70. Wherever there are soulless minds and guideless lives, and in a small body, self is all that counts. Wherever love and light and largeness lack, these crooked fashioners take up their task. To all half-conscious worlds they extend their reign. Here too, these godlings drive our human hearts. Our nature's twilight is their lurking place. Here too, the darkened primitive heart obeys the veiled suggestions of a hidden mind that dogs our knowledge with misleading light and stands between us and the truth that saves.
Dogs here means follows?
Follows closely behind. A good dog won't run away, no, and follow at your heels. And of course it also suggests you can't escape from, you can't get away from. It's following you like a faithful dog, or like your shadow. Jocelyn, you would read? Jocelyn, would you read?
I look at engines of an island of chances, channels, rivers of stupendous winds, tools of unknown. Invested with power in nature's mental state, into the actions of those think their own. They bring the influences of faith, or make the beginning of time speak of darkness, and cross the lives of men from hand to hand in an unconsequent and dangerous game. Against all higher truths that stop the way. Only the guiding force wherein lies born, in all the length of death, they fall from the inner heart, and all our nature's terms they intervene. In signature aspects of the old beach, lies conditions of nature and environment. They build our confidence, structure of self-being. And in the ninth dimension of our egos, factories and masks surround the beautiful temple of the soul.
Thank you. Ananke is the Greek goddess of necessity. She's one of four faceless goddesses who are responsible for human fate. And it is said that even the gods fear her. So when she appears in the halls of the gods, they turn their faces away. They don't want her to notice them. And she herself doesn't have a face. She's responsible for necessity, for the inevitable consequences, which here Shobindo says organize the play of chance. So these spirits, these obscure spirits, are serving a mightier power. Perhaps Ananke is that mightier power. And they are perverse channels of a stupendous, a very, very powerful will. They are tools of the unknown, but they use us as their tools. They've been invested with power. They've been given some power on the lower levels of life. So into our lives, into the actions that we think are our own conscious choices, they bring the incoherences of fate. If the things that you think everything's going fine and whoops, something comes and upsets your plans. Or they make a doom of time's slipshod caprice, things that time does carelessly, they give very terrible consequences. And they toss the lives of men from hand to hand just for fun in an inconsequent, a meaningless, devious, complicated game. In their very stuff, these beings, these small beings, these elemental beings, their stuff rebels against all higher truth. And they will obey only a very strong force, a power. Mother could control these beings. She could do it. They had to obey her. They have a tremendous hold on our human hearts. They intervene in all our nature's terms. And they are building up structures, insignificant architects, of low-built lives, sordid little lives, engineers of interest and desire, selfishness, out of crude earthiness and muddy thrills and coarse reactions of material nerve. They build our huddled structures of self-will, packed closely together like slums, you know, the ill-lighted mansions of our thought. A mansion, of course, is a big, beautiful building. But here in India, it also has come to be a building where a mansion which has been built for profit and where there are small, small rooms and many, many people live, like a tenement. And then there is, of course, always in everyone the beautiful temple of the soul. But if it's all surrounded by these factories and bazaars of the ego. Varadarajan, would you read? Would you read? Yes.
Art is minute on the hues of brittleness. Is that the mosaic of our comedy? Our plan, the trivial tragedy of our days? Are in the deep, combine the circumstance and the fantasia of the most costly. These unwise pompous of man, human and power, and tutors of his country, speech and grief, rulers of petty loves and lusts and tastes, and dreamless hearts and shallow emotions of his heart. is like illusion makers with their mass. When it is the record of a well-used stage, and you will see shifters of the human being, thereby rising the inward thing. Ourselves incapable to build our faith only as I test it and start the path until the peace is done and we pass out into greater time and further space. Thus they inflict their little victory now and cut the mounting slow rays of man. Then his tools can be walked in death, they pose.
So it's like a theater, no? Artists, directors in the theater. Pay minute attention to these hues, these colors of littleness. They make a mosaic, little pieces together. Either they give us a comedy or they plan the trivial tragedy of our days. But they arrange everything, combine the circumstances. Even they dress up the moods of the people involved, of the characters. These beings are unwise. They are revolting against all higher truth. They are doing all this just for fun. They are the prompters of man's ignorant heart. You know, in a theater, below the stage, there will be the prompter, the man who has to remind the actors if they forget what they're supposed to be saying or doing. So there, we have prompters too who are telling us, telling our hearts what we should do, teaching us to what we have to say and what want. And they're what they play with are all our petty angers and desires and hates and our changeful thoughts and shallow emotions that are just for a moment. These are illusion makers, and their illusions are very unimportant and trivial. They have masks. They paint the scenery of the stage, and they move it around. Nimble means quick and skillful, no? At moving the scenery around. They are always busy with this ill-lit scene of our little life. And in that state, we ourselves are completely unable to build our own fate. We're just like actors who've been hired, organized by these directors and scene shifters. We just make our appearance, speak, strut like an actor, our parts, until the play is over. And then we pass off into a brighter time. A subtler space. So in this way, these godheads of the little life are inflicting their tiny little law on us and curbing, holding back our evolution, our mounting slow uprise of humanity. They're holding it back. They hold it back as much as they can, and then our little short lifetime, they close it with death. This is the ephemeral creature's daily life. As long as the human animal is lord, and a dense nether nature screens the soul, as long as intellect's outward gazing sight serves earthy interest and creature joys, an incurable littleness pursues his days. Ever since consciousness was born on earth, life is the same in insect, ape, and man. Stuff unchanged, its way the common route. If new designs, if richer details grow, and thought is added, and more tangled cares, if, little by little, it wears a brighter face, still, even in man, the plot is mean and poor. Jean-Yves, would you read on?
Should I read?
Yes.
We have to read through from this
We haven't read this yet?
No.
Aha. So I started reading it. Shall we go on then? We just go on reading to the end of the section or until we run out of time? Okay. Would you go on, please, Sean? A gross content.
A gross content prolongs his fall state. His small successes are failure of the soul. His little pleasures punctuate frequent weeks, hardship and toil are the heavy price he pays for the life to live and his last wages death. An inertia sound towards inconscience, a sleep that imitates death is heavy force. A puny splendor of creative force is made his spur to fragile human works, which yet outlast their weak creative grace. He dreams sometimes of the rivers of the gods and sees the Dionysian gesture pass, a leonine redness that would tear his soul if through his failing limbs and fainting heart the sweet and joyful mighty madness swept. Trivial amusements stimulate and waste the energy given to him to grow and be. His little hour is spent in little things. A brief companionship with many jobs, a little love and jealousy and hate, a touch of friendship with indifferent crowds, draw his heart plan on life's divinity. If something great awakes, to frame his pitch, to reveal his zenith tension of delight, he sought to eternize his ephemeral soul. Art's brilliant gleam is a pastime for his eyes, a thrill that smites and nerves his music spell. Amidst his harassed toil and welfare cares, pressed by the labor of his crowding thoughts, he draws sometimes around his aching rope. Majors come mighty hands to heal his dark pain. He is saved by her silence from his rapid self. In her tragic beauty is his purest bliss.
Thank you. Myung.
A new life dawns, he looks out from distance wide. The sweet breath moves him, but soon retires. A sustain was not made to hold the precept guest. All dies down to convention and routine. All appears excitement brings him vivid joys. His days are tinged with the red hue of strife, and thus heart glare and passion's crimson stain. Battle and murder are his tribal game. Time has been known to turn his eyes within and look for his lost and his dead soul. His motion on too short and axis wheels. He cannot soar but creeps on his long road. Oh, he, impatient of the trudge of time, he would make a splendid haste on face slow road. His heart that runs soon pants and tires and sinks. Oh, he walks ever on and finds no end.
Thank you. Sebastian?
Hardly few can climb greater life. All birds to low scale.
Tunes.
All tunes to low scale and conscious pit. His knowledge dwells the house of ignorance. His force mirrors not even once the omnipotent. rare as this is, heavenly ecstasy, the bliss, which sleeps in the city, which sleeps in things and tries to wake, breaks out in him in a small joy of life. This scanty grace is his persistent state. It lightens the burden of his many ills and reconciles him to his little world. He is satisfied with his common average kind. Tomorrow's hopes and his old rounds of thought, his old familiar interests and desires, he has made into a thick and narrowing hedge, defending his small life from the invisible. His being's kinship to infinity, he has shut away from him into inmost self, fenced off the greatness of his God. His being was formed by a trivial part, in a little drama on a petty stage, in a narrow plot, he has pitched his tent of life beneath the wide gaze of the staring God. He is the crown of all that has been done. Thus his creation's labor justified. This is the world's result, nature's last poise.
Thank you. You read, please. Mom, do you read? You. Yes.
And if this were all and nothing more where it ends, if what now seems where the whole of what must be, if this were not a state through which we pass on our road from matter to eternal self, to the light that made the worlds, the cause of things, well might integrate our mind to the view, existence as an extent in time, illusion or phenomenon or freak, the paradox of a creative thought which moves between unreal boxes, inanimate force struggling to feel and know, matter that changed to lead itself by mind, unconscious monstrously and genuine soul, at times all looks unreal and remote. We seem to live in a fiction of our thoughts, peace from sensations, fanciful travel story, or calls on the film of the recording rain, a figment or circumstance in cosmic sleep, a somnambulist walking under the moon, an image of people dressed to an ignorant dream, counting the moments of spectral time, in a false perspective of effect and cause, trusting the special prospect of road streets. It drifts incessantly from scene to scene, when it knows not to what fathoms verge. All here is dreamed for God's graces, but who the dreamer is and whence he looks is still unknown, or only a shadowy guess.
Thank you. Rita.
The world is real, but ourselves too small, insufficient for the mightiness of our stage. Life curve crosses the titan world of the orbit of the soulless universe, and in the belly of this fast rolling mass, a mind looks out from a small casual view and wonders what itself and all things are. And yet, to some internal subjective sight that strangely has formed in matter's sightless stuff, a pointy edge.
Pointillage. Well, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Pointillage, minute of little self, takes figure as world beings conscious base. Such is our scene in the half-light below. This is the sign of matter's infinite. This is the weird science, the giantess, measurer of a field. As the force on the record of a close survey, and mathematicists, her huge external world, to reason bound within the circle of sense, or in thought's broad, impalpable exchange, in tenuous abstractions in the void of her currency. We know not with what firm values for its place. Only religion presents its dubious riches to our hearts, or science unprovisioned checks on the beyond. Our poverty shall then have its revenge. Our spirits depart, discarding a futile life, into the blank unknown, or with them take death's passport into immortality.
Yet was this only a provisional scheme, a false appearance sketched by limited sense? Mind's insufficient self-discovery, an early attempt, a first experiment. This was a boy to amuse the infinite earth, but knowledge ends not in these surface powers that live upon alleged illusions, and dare not look into the dangerous depths, or to stare upward, measuring the unknown. There is a deeper seeing from within, and when we have left these small purlieus of mind, a greater vision meets us on the heights, in the luminous wildness of the spirit's gaze. At last, there wakes in us a witness soul that looks at truths unseen and scans the unknown. Then all assumes a new and marvelous face. The world thrills with the godlike and its glory. In time's deep heart, higher purposes move and live. Life's waters crumble and join in pain. This broad, confused, yet rigid scheme becomes a magnificent and broad view of the gods. Again, the world immediately seems to know.
Thank you.
Our seekings are short-lived experiments made by a wordless and inscrutable power, testing its issues from inconscient mind to meet its luminous self of truth and bliss. It peers at the real through the apparent form. It labors in our mortal mind and sense, amid the figures of ignorance in the symbol of pictures drawn by word and thought. It seeks the truth to which all figures point. It looks for the source of light on vision's lamp. It works to find the doer of all works, the unfelt self within who is the guide, the unknown self above who is the goal. All is not here a blinded nature's task. A word of wisdom watches us from on high. A witness sanctioning her will and works, an eye unseen in the unseen vast. There is an influence from a light above. There are thoughts remote and sealed eternities. A mystic motive drives the star and suns. In this passage from a deaf, unknowing force to struggling consciousness and transient breath, a mighty supernature waits on time.
Thank you.
The world
no, thanks. Let's pause there. A mighty supernature waits on time. Wow. Francis, you'd like to read?
The word is poser than we know, see, now think and see. Our life is deeper mystery than we have been. Our needs are scattered in the range of God. Our souls are future sense of the supreme. Across the cosmic field through narrow lanes, asking, can't you
intelligence there is endowed in dangers of the most remarkable. Even in the theater of the small land, behind the act, a secret sweetness of grace, a huge miniature divinity. This depression from the world of God flows to the dark face of the soul. The force that helps support the suffering Christ, and we see nearness in hiding God without nothing short of flowers in the trees. No month of an earthquake happens. Exaltation in the deeps of sleep. The heart lives, raising the world of pain.
Thank you. To him.
Infant nursed on nature's covered breast, an infant being in the magic woods, floating to rapture by the spirit's streams, awaits the hour when we shall go to his home in this investiture of fleshly life, a soul that is a spark of God survives, and sometimes it breaks through the solid stream and think of the fire that makes us have begun. In our body's cells, there sits a hidden power that sees the unseen and plans eternity. Our smallest parts have gone for deepest needs. There too, the golden messages can come. The door is cut in the third wall of self. Across the lowly threshold with bowed heads, angels of ecstasy and self-pity pass, and lodged in an inner sanctuary of dream, the makers of the image of deity pity is there, and far-range sacrifice and flashes of sympathy and tenderness cast heaven lights from the heart's secluded shrine.
Thank you. Fanny.
A work is done in the deep silence, a glory and wonder of spiritual state, a laughter in beauty's everlasting space, transforming world experience into joy, inhabit the history of the untouched Christ. Love by time's deep eternity sweets in us, in the seed of hermetic heart, the happy core unmoved behind this outer shape of death. The eternal entity prepares within its matter of divine felicity, its radiant heavenly ceremony, even in our skeptic mind of ignorance, a foresight comes upon immense wings. Our will lifts towards its slow and shaking hands, each part in us desires its absolute. Our souls cover the everlasting light, our strength derives from an omnipotent force, and since from the veil God's choice the words were made, and since eternal beauty asks for form, even here where all is made of big dust, our hearts are captured by unsmelling shapes. Our very senses lively seek for this.
I think that's where we should pause. Our very senses blindly seek for bliss. We'll stop there today.
Thanks to Sherpin.